they're really four levels of externally considering, thinking about others. Kindness is the entry level. Empathy, which they're speaking to, compassion and caring, each one taking on a deeper interest in another person's growth and development.
Welcome back to Business Second Opinion Podcast. We're always excited to bring you another episode. Business Second Opinion Podcast digs deep to explore questions about business and business practice. And in the process of examining them, we give you a second opinion, as you know by now, a contrarian one, one that's well-tested and proven to give you the outcomes you want without the nasty side effects. And by the way, if you want to learn more about how we work and how to work more closely with us, stay tuned at the end of the show. I'm Zach Swartow. And with me, as always, is Carol Sanford, our in-house positive contrarian, responding to big and hard questions with a radically different take. Hey, Carol.
Hi, Zach. We got a really fun request this week for a second opinion, of course, on an article about leadership traits, particularly if you're trying to get inclusivity in your organization. It was sent by Keela Young. I did a podcast with her group in Eco Villages, and she wanted to know what we think about it. What do you think about this article she sent?
Yeah, so the article from Harvard Business Review this week is titled The Key to Inclusive Leadership by Juliet Burke and Andrea Titus from March 6th of 2020. The article proposes that inclusion is the key to lifting organizational performance in all employees. Ultimately, inclusion starts from leadership, making sure that leaders need to make sure everyone feels included. And then, ultimately, the workers will be happier and work harder. While I think this article means well, as all these articles do, as a business owner, it's hard for me to see just how making everyone's going to feel included is going to ensure that we're considering the whole of the business, our customers, and the systems we're trying to contribute to. But Carol, where do you see inclusion fitting into that?
Well, you know, what always strikes me as interesting when people send us articles and when I read Harvard Business Review, that all their answers to every challenge gets two things backward. And it's how they end up with the kind of ideas they come up with. How this happens and becomes ingrained starts from how we see the world. I said there are two things backwards. First, we see the effects on employees, like you just spoke of, as needing to be managed from outside by leaders. If you fix the leader and find the right leader, then you make the environment right for people, now you got people who can get what they want. So it's always outside the person. Zach, do you know what I mean by assuming solutions come from outside of people by their bosses?
Totally. So this goes back to our pool stick and cue ball analogy at work again. And so in the article, they actually categorize this as a capability problem. But this looks more like a checklist of behaviors that leaders need to follow, right, that are externally determined. So speaking of which, actually, let me just give you the list of traits that you as a leader should follow in order to be more inclusive, according to the article. So number one, visual commitment. They articulate authentic commitment to diversity, challenge the status quo, hold others accountable, and make diversity and inclusion a personal priority. That's number one. Number two, humility. They are modest about capabilities, admit mistakes, and create the space for others to contribute. Number three, awareness of bias. They show awareness of personal blind spots as well as flaws in the system and work hard to ensure a meritocracy. Number four, curiosity about others. They demonstrate an open mindset and deep curiosity about others, listen without judgment, and seek with empathy to understand those around them. And then number five, cultural intelligence. They are attentive to others' cultures and adapt as required. And then number six, and lastly, effective collaboration. They empower others, pay attention to diversity of thinking and psychological safety, and focus on team cohesion. So once again, we see a prospective list of behaviors attempting to tell people to behave, which will, based on 360-degree feedback surveys, which they have a lot of, lift those survey numbers. So it's like this kind of thinking misses the more fundamental opportunities presented through development, I think almost entirely, like customers, right? For crying out loud.
Yeah. And actually engaging with customers, because you're not saying you quit paying attention to the people, but you're saying, why in the world aren't we connecting people with the customers a way of working on this. So I know that was the way you were even asked to work with people in healthcare, where you were assumed that you should be working internally on people who couldn't work on themselves, but you create the right kind of leader traits. And if you agree, where in the world do those things come from? What kind of beliefs? What kind of theory?
Yeah, so there's a bevy of these programs in healthcare, right? And many staff and leaders were put through a number of diversity and inclusion trainings, also specifically. It didn't stop the complaints, however, from stacking up, with First Nations folks, for example, who stated quite often that their needs in the emergency room were ignored based solely on the stereotyping of their condition and their background. So the root of all these programs is still behaviorist thinking, which we've talked about before, which proposes that if we can change the behavior, we can change the thinking. And as we and our listeners know, that's not how it works, except maybe for dogs occasionally, which I think speaks in another way to what HBR gets backwards.
Yeah, it does seem to come out of behavior theory when I read it too, with all the assumptions built into that, which are, of course, rampant in everything, every educational system, every business any of us have ever been a part of or touched. The story about that you've heard me tell, so I'm not going to go back over all the details, but one of the things that's important is to know that it was actually created as a theory by a human being, and he may have been the founder or he may have been the one who made it popular, but his core idea in behavioralism was, in fact, his theory won't work if what you believe is human beings could be introspective. And he originally, John Watson, was an introspective psychologist. He lost faith in that, as did a bunch of people. People started saying, let's look at behavior. And in order to get money and everything to do that, he had to tell people, introspection doesn't happen in humans. They have to be told what is going on in order to even see themselves. So I think that kind of matters. Zach, do you agree with that?
Yeah, that's the idea, right? That humans are closed systems and that the only way to change them is from the outside, just like a machine. But it's like each time we've said it before, you know, humans ain't machines. And so all the feedback that's mentioned in the article, that's all sourced from that same paradigm. So Carol, you said there were two errors in most HBR articles. What was the other one?
Well, yeah. Okay. So the first one is human beings are not introspective. They can't see themselves. They can't observe. They can't do self-observing. The second one is going to sound like it's opposite in some ways. It's where the work has to take place inside the organization. You just spoke to, no one here thinks about customers, stakeholders, or the system, which all of this is a part, which is a much more powerful way of helping people see themselves and change behavior. But in this article, and almost every HBR article, the solution is to train the leaders and the bosses, correct their behavior, and get them to have certain traits as though the work is inside and you're looking inward. You're not looking outward. And are we working in the world correctly so that we could really connect people with something greater than themselves?
Yeah, so they propose that the solution is outside, as Carol said, of the people that experience the problem, and that the answers are inside, what's closest to them. Is that what you mean? Right? So the answer is, I think, if I can distill it a little bit, they fix the problem by working on the leaders who are in charge and work inside the organization on action and behaviors. So, Carol, but let's cut to the chase. What is our second opinion of this whole thing?
Yes. Well, pretty much you summarized it pretty well. People can't see and help themselves. And whatever answers there are in behavioral terms on the inside of the organization, the training, et cetera, we need to flip that around. The development of all people to grow themselves, to make their own context work, is what we really want to work on. And we want to connect them to the external world so that their work is not about what's at the end of their nose. And there's actually a third one, but we'll come back to that in a moment.
Okay, so if I'm tracking, HBR makes three ongoing errors, right, as you said. I think that's a pretty good amount of ammunition for the show today. But let's come back to that in a second. What's the second one you're speaking of when it gets flipped, I think, as you said? Right? I could see the problem that assuming workers can't be self-managing and self-evolving. We've talked about that a lot. But what's the insider error?
Well, that's when we think we run our business based on looking at what we deliver, not even to customers and to the market and what any employee is doing internal, but what we expect of them. And so we're internally focused. We're not system focused. And that is part of what causes a huge amount of what causes people in, quote, leadership roles to end up not paying attention and engaging with people in a non-inclusive way, because we're not including the environment and setting it up so everyone can really work. We take a few people and get them externally focused, like sales, marketing, people who are talking to the shareholders, usually the CEO, legal. All of them are looking external, and they expect everyone else to stay focused internally. So you get all of these programs and articles like this one that tell you how to work on the internal thing. And then, of course, you double down on getting people to focus on what's in front of them and get their, as you pointed out, their behavior corrected.
Right. And let me pick up on that and take it a little bit further. So in most organizations, development happens at retreats or in bars or outside of work where it actually matters, right? And so they work on abstract ideas and find it nearly, most employees find it nearly impossible to apply them when they go back to their desk. It's all window dressing to keep people happy, but never really evolves the thinking that drives everyday work. So if the development happens outside of work, and the structure of development assumes that all the effects need to be generated from outside the individual, when does the internal work happen for the individual? That's why we work to grow self-reflection and internal thinking to contribute to the lives and systems outside of the company. And as a contrast to this, Carol, I'm sure people are thinking you have to have someone attending the store, right? How many more people can we spare for something like this?
Right. And of course, there's a way of looking at this, which is there are things happening outside, but none of them are related to real work. And so all of the people need to be spared. Every last one of them, everyone in the company would be, their capability would be built to be self-observing, self-managing, working together. And you would work never on just the internal capability of the organization and get people problem solving inside, but connected to the inside and the outside, and the inside and outside of themselves, which you just referenced. More behaviorism is not the answer. So we end up splitting the work among different people with different skills because we don't have everyone thinking about the system as a whole. What's your second opinion on that?
So I use a framework. Well, we use a framework and we call it three lines of work to bring thinking to bear in a given situation. For a recent project, actually, now that I'm thinking about it, in order to think more critically about how to approach it, I knew I had to think not only about our team, but our customers and the effects on their lives, while simultaneously considering the effects we were also trying to have on the system of visual entertainment. So I had, it was like suddenly I was able to take much more into account in the concrete design and project plan that I was working on.
Yeah, and you do that because you've been working in this work, but even you have been reinforced with all the behavioral ideas and training people on this fragmented thinking. How in the world do we have so much of that?
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned that. So it's hard to kind of get your arms around, but it's like in my life, I've noticed this showing up pretty much everywhere. In church in my younger years, in school with my parents, the focus is always on a behavioral issue that I had, whether it was I was too meek or too loud or not paying attention. It always came down to a criticism of my behavior and how to fix it. So I would focus on a behavior and try to tamp that down. Right. And in the process, I would create a whole other mess of behavioral issues. And it also dumbed down my thinking, frankly, because I was always thinking about me and my problems rather than something more useful.
I'm sorry to laugh, but I was just thinking, watching you in my mind, working on one behavior and another one popping up.
I know.
Network. Sorry. Let me offer something else. You commented on, they gave these six, what they call capabilities, which were really a prescribed list of behaviors. I'd like to actually propose six capabilities that have different messages. And we've talked about many of these over the years of the podcast. But instead of looking at signature traits of inclusive leaders, which is what they're doing, and how you get everyone to behave the same way, I have six principles that everyone would build capability around. The first one is what you spoke of, is all of the design work, the planning work, the development work, everything uses this idea of three lines of work you mentioned, the me and my work, the community and the team, and the customers and the stakeholders. All of them are a nested system. Learning how to actually have everyone thinking that way, even when they're filling out a report. What does this do? How does it advance the life of any of our stakeholders? Secondly, and this one I find the hardest thing in the world for people to grasp, I'm going to try saying it really slow and see if it goes in. None of it is about behavior and what people can't do, and you in church trying to be taught to be quieter. It's all about capability. People can't think well enough to get to the kind of observing, and they're not taught how to see themselves. It's not that, John Watson was right, people couldn't, but it wasn't that, or they weren't, is really more what he should have said. We work 100% on building capability. We are not consultants. We are not coaches. We are not mentors. We are educators of inner and outer work and how to build the capacity to think and be. So number two is about building capability to work in complex systems. Number three, we don't have the right kind of infrastructure. We have hierarchical infrastructure where someone outside of you tells you how to behave. We need to create and build infrastructure that enables and demands that everyone specify their own contribution. They understand the people they're serving, the stakeholder, including Earth. They understand that, and they are connecting and can say out loud to people the effect that their work has and what they're going to promise to do to improve that. We don't have any infrastructure that allows people to initiate in order to change the lives of stakeholders, unless maybe you're a product development person. We want everyone doing that. Number four, you want teams, instead of being organized internally, to have an externally organization with everyone in the organization being one of the teams. I've called them here market field teams, sometimes they're customer field teams, distributor, but they're wrapping the internal with the external and not measuring the outputs of an activity inside the company, but in the lives of people we serve. That's a whole different way to create teams, different kind of infrastructure. The fifth one, each individual initiates efforts, everybody, for evolving the working of customers' lives, stakeholders' lives, and working to gain the resources inside the corporation. Sixth and final, all assessments of performance are based on the effects in the stakeholder's life, not in the activity, not in complying, aligning with all the competencies or list of behaviors. And the assessment is led by the person who made the promise, who designed, who delivered. And they work from something we sometimes call effects development plan. So instead of a performance development plan, which keeps people looking internal, they look at effects. Those six would really give us a whole different organization and change a lot. What do you think of those?
Yeah, I mean, so let me take one of these, actually, and let me speak about how, for me, this leads to inclusion and meaning, which really this article is actually about. So let's look at number five. It's easy to fall into the trap of infighting and jockeying for positions at a company if that only thing that you care about is the manager's opinion of your work. right? It breeds this kind of destructive competition that eats companies alive, which I saw on Wall Street all the time. As a contrast, if you look at aspect number five, you could see how working to see the effect on the lives of customers gives a really strong focus to the aims and goals a team can share, creating a sense of shared growth for all involved.
Yeah. And I mean, I'm just imagining how much Wall Street would change if you were, and their companies begin to advertise right now, we only do well when you do well. And that's trying to get at that thought. Because right now, and you said the manager's opinion, but with 360-degree feedback, you're trying to please everyone internally. That's what I see.
Yeah, and so let's look at number three, right? Let's pick another one. So instead of worrying about an internal rating system that determines my worth, yeah. I'm laughing. It's kind of sad, though.
Yeah.
Instead, I'm concerned with an ever-expanding number of entities, which are company effects. Right? Back to the effects development plan. This gives us the ability to calibrate and recalibrate how we work accordingly with one another, instead of having it all tied to giving a bunch of feedback to one another and a number that gets pulled out of the air based on my personality flaws.
I love the idea that, and I've seen this happen over and over again, when you have everyone tied together in teams and individually, to serving something in the marketplace, it undermines so much of the competition that's all about, as you said, jockeying for position and favor and being seen well. What I love also about this is it's also better for the business. Sometimes doing what they're talking about in this article, often, I should say, not sometimes, is it gets everybody focused on trying to meet other people's expectations the way you just said, and it doesn't really solve the problem of inclusion. Inclusion comes from being included in contribution. And this, of course, makes a huge difference to human development on the planet.
Yeah, because all the work happens inside and is birthed from the uniqueness of each individual in the context of a unique circumstance, which you mentioned. This is the ultimate diversity, which I think you've also talked about before.
Yeah. It is about human development in the world. That's what we're trying to get people to think about here.
Yeah, which I hope, dear listeners, as you know by now, it's the point of the podcast, frankly.
Yeah, right. You know, the other thing that annoyed me about this whole traits thing is I think that when we speak about traits, it's very easy to end up with non-diversified because you don't fit the category. And even if you don't have that written down, it is undermining it. Here, get rid of traits. Get rid of the way we normally do it. Set it up to be tied to contribution and teams and no one doing external evaluation. And suddenly, you have a whole different plan. And, you know, we speak about humility also as being a part of Socratic method, or being a resource to someone else. And it means for us that you don't assume to know what is best for someone else. And you don't impose your feedback or your coaching or mentoring onto others. You start with releasing attachments to you are right. What that takes, and I think it's related to this article. Can you comment on that?
Yeah, I mean, so in the article they mentioned humility, Ben. Obviously, as Carol said, we mean it in a different way, right? So when they said humility, it's about acknowledging one's personality flaws and asking for feedback about how to change those. When we say it, we mean humility towards the subject and those around us, right? So it's really about service. And that refers more closely to the Buddhist idea of a beginner's mind. So the goal is to approach the subject and those engaged with it with a level of openness and understanding that we're incomplete as humans and on an evolutionary path. Not with the goal of trying to get higher feedback ratings.
Yeah. You know, that reminds me, we also talk about empathy, which they have in their list. I speak about it in the regenerative business as there are really four levels of externally considering, thinking about others. Kindness is the entry level. Empathy, which they're speaking to, compassion and caring, each one taking on a deeper interest in another person's growth and development. So I always say kindness is a minimum. We don't want to cause harm, so to speak. And perhaps it's related more to giving dignity and respect. And I always think kindness is important for our development. Empathy is acknowledging to ourselves and others that we've been there. Also, you know, we felt it. So we understand from experience in the world and inside ourselves from having reflected on it. Compassion means that we want to act and take on a duty or an obligation to help their discomfort, their problem, their pain go away with our own resources, with our own effort. Caring is more what we encourage and seek to build, which is seeing others as a source of their own answers, being able to follow their own lead, and we work to give them capability to resolve their own situation in a way they would design to do it. That doesn't mean we turn them loose. It means we create a community and we work on the capability building and we commit to being a resource. I often say, if I let someone into my life, I am accepting that it is my role to help them, not out of compassion, but out of capability building, and not taking and finding solutions for them or being the reconciler, not advising. You want them to have a long-term ableness, design and lead themselves.
And the key to that last one is being in a community, right? And that works on all six of the human ablenesses you listed earlier. A community matters because it's not about a singular leader from which all direction must come. Instead, it fosters growth for a whole rather than some predetermined corporate division.
That, coupled with getting rid of the kind of current infrastructures we have, building the new ones where we're connecting the internal and external, inner and outer, and particularly setting up so everything is designed for us to figure out how to contribute into the world beyond the organization internally and think more about the stakeholders to our effort. And speaking of effort, it takes effort to have to set all this up. And mostly, this exhausts me because you have to get rid of all the ideas of the current infrastructure based on the old humanist and behavioral theories and the machine theories that came out of the Industrial Revolution 200 to 400 years ago, which we still live with every day.
And if you guys want, dear listeners, read chapter 5 in the regenerative business, and it'll help you to understand how we get Harvard Business Review to articles like we do. It's called 30 Toxic Practices. Most of your best practices will probably end up in that list.
It's really true. We have to get rid of the upside down, inside out kind of things that we're talking about here and believe that people can see and grow and develop themselves and not require external sources to manage, guide, and evaluate us, and not require the list of the things they want us to be like, and believe and probably understand that people can connect their own lives and work to the external effects that they're having from their effort. That these two things are created, these two things create the meaning, the inclusion we're seeking, and they erase the foundations, that infrastructure that's there, that produce bias and judgment based on categories. It's a huge effort to get there.
And Carol, what was the third error that you hinted at?
Oh, right. We should come back to that. You spoke at the beginning already about where it was. It's about community. We're not in a flatland world where everyone is separate and can be judged separately like we do right now. And, of course, that happens in school, too. A whole team could work on something and figure out how they did. But no, we grade everybody separately. We're in cultures that are embedded in organizations and nations and communities we inhabit and get ingrained by. They include our beliefs that are invisible in those communities. And there, we rarely have a conversation about the effect that we have. And so we get all the proposals that come out of Harvard Business Review that are scattered and are from a way of seeing that's not examined. I mean, all those articles include practices that flow from the beliefs, and they're unexamined, and they include infrastructure that tends to channel thinking, effort, and judgment. In other words, all this stuff is systemic.
And that is why we create Business Second Opinion, right? To give individuals, communities, and organizations the value for the ableness and desire to really examine what's creating their world by looking deeply into how and where they source their thinking. And let us know if you want us to examine any article on which we can give a second opinion.
At Business Second Opinion, we have greatly appreciated what you've sent us and how you've joined us and how you've donated to support us. And I'm going to create a YouTube channel. Now, it's going to be on a different subject. But again, it's going to be designed to help people examine the deeper belief and practices, but at an individual level. And it's going to be built off of my book, The Regenerative Life. And the show will be called Regenerative Life Hacks. But the hacks are for meaning. Therefore, how do we bring more meaning into our lives and the roles? If you are interested in that, you may have just gotten a newsletter about it, or you should sign up for the newsletter. Or you can send me an email if you want to know more.
Also, we're launching a new community for parents, couples, family pods organized around the same children, and community pods of multiple family pods who all want to learn and grow together.
And by the way, you can set up a book club for the regenerative life using all the extensive workbooks I've created and the video online workshops. All of that's free. And you get a discount of 50% for buying in bulk, which is required for this offer. You have to buy 100 books through my publisher, but half off, not bad. You can learn more about that at carolsanford.com.
This has been Business Second Opinion.